Ho! Welcome to the debut episode of Primetime Props. What we're doing here is a little show about the NFL season. From what I understand, nobody else is doing this. There's no other shows that cover the NFL. So this is a must-watch, if I'm guessing correctly, for everyone out there. Listen, I'm Jeff Edelstein. I'm going to be your host today. I am not smart. Don't listen to anything I say. I'm vibes. I got experts here with me. We're going to tell you all you need to know, and we're going to try to make some money this week. I got Justin Carlucci. I got Keith Eister. Take it away, fellas.
Yeah, what's going on? Keith Eister here. Happy to be on board. New to the props team, but excited about what we have going on here. Lots of awesome content up on the site. Getting involved in these YouTube streets here, and going to bring you guys some good stuff here today, I believe, for the first week of the NFL season. Got started last night with a fun game, interesting start to that game, which we can get into a little bit, but excited to be here, excited for this NFL season. Hopefully going to bring you guys some awesome stuff here.
Yeah, I can't believe we're finally here. You know, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift got engaged before the season started. So I had some fun jumping on Jeff's podcast with Eric Raskin at our sister site last week. And you guys do a great job over there, the low Rollers pod. I mean, just if anyone is looking for another, like an actual angle on the actual betting industry and not just us talking about props, I mean, you guys do awesome work over there. And shout out to Eric, who's a Birds fan, and the Eagles, you know, snuck away with the win yesterday. But enough about yesterday. I'm the Looch, as they called me once upon a time, and I've worked with these two gentlemen at multiple platforms. Jeff, you're modest, man. I love your work. Your columns are hilarious. My favorite column of yours to date, and I don't know if this is saying a lot or less, is getting off the Schneid. Since Jeff didn't want to share any fun facts about himself, he's a Martin Maldonado stan. For the
I am. Yeah, I like playing Martin Maldonado. I like that $2,000 catcher
when he hits a home run. Those catchers, man, can't beat him.
I feel so happy, and you feel so smart when he connects. Before we get going, what's our rule on spitting? Are we going with pro or anti spitting situation here?
Yeah, you know, I'm not at will to say while the league's investigating.
So okay, fair.
I think we'll just have to move past that one. But ton of content on the site, whether you guys like betting anytime touchdowns, first touchdowns, any kind of props, you name it. NFL's in full swing. We have college football stuff. And baseball hasn't gone away yet. You like dinger picks? We got them every day. Everything at props is free. That's the beautiful thing about what we do. Right now, our content is all free. Our Discord community is starting to hum a little bit. Keith and myself will be in there along with our other experts, and we'll be back here every Friday. So we're looking forward to bringing the show to you weekly and talk everything Sunday main slate. So without further ado, I will let Jeff orchestrate this thing. Let's get going.
Yeah, before we get to Sunday main slate, let's talk down South America way in a few hours. The Chiefs 3-point favorites with a 47.5 over under there. What do you think? Anything popping out of you, Justin?
Yeah, you know, and I'll let Keith, you know, spin off this too, but just playing in a different country is quite a different environment. I guess that's stating the obvious, but this total was bet up from the opening. And I'm not sure if I agree with that. I'm probably going to end up betting the under by the end of the show here. If I can find a nice 47.5 or 48.5 number. I mean, listen, we know the Chiefs don't have Rashee Rice. You know, Hollywood Brown's been dinged up all camp. Story of his career. You know, what are you going to get out of Travis Kelce? I'm hoping Pacheco's healthy. I'm sure a lot of people are. But the Chargers have a decent, you know, defense on paper. But I think what's interesting is, and I use a lot of sources to do my research. I really like Fantasy Points data. So a lot of advanced stuff that I reference will be from Fantasy Points. But these are two of the top three teams who ran the most cover two shell in the league, which means they're not letting explosive plays happen. And I thought it was really interesting that Patrick Mahomes kind of had some subpar numbers against cover two, like two man deep last season. And we knew that offense took a step back and they were the grounded pound conservative. They just really, really didn't have the personnel. But Mahomes ranked 34th in ADOT and 31st in yards per attempt against two high shell coverage last season. So I don't know if the Chiefs are really able to stretch the field outside of Xavier Worthy as it is. So you throw in kind of, you know, not his poor play because he still had like 14 touchdowns and 5 picks against that type of coverage. But I think it's going to be kind of a plodding along type of game. And you look at the Chargers, you know, some new faces there. Amorion Hampton, as much as I think he's a talented rookie, he's obviously playing his first NFL game. Najee Harris had the fireworks accident thing, and he didn't really have a training camp. So I think this game might be a little sluggish, Keith. What's your take on this game in general?
Yeah, I agree with you on that take. I lean under here as well on the total. Just the travel that's involved. Now, it is not quite the same as going across the pond to like a London or a Germany where the time change is just massive. Relatively similar time zones here as they're just headed straight south, basically. A couple hours east, maybe. But for the most part, time zones that these teams are used to, it's still a massively long trip. So I do think the travel involved here plays a role. Both of these defenses are really good. We've seen that over the past couple of seasons. So I'm with you. I like the under on the total. There are a couple of props that I have my eye on for overs, though. You mentioned one of the guys that I'm super high on. That's Xavier Worthy. And just because of what's going on with the Chiefs pass catchers, obviously we know Rashee Rice is suspended for the first six games. He is the alpha wide receiver in this room. Travis Kelce has been in decline for a couple of years now. Obviously, all the off-the-field stuff has gone swimmingly for him. Couldn't have asked for a better runout for Travis Kelce in life. But I believe his best football playing days are probably in his past at this point. So that's their top two options from the past few seasons are on the shelf, basically. Kelsey's obviously going to be involved, but not to the level that we've seen in years past. That leaves the door wide open for Xavier Worthy. His prop... I actually have an article up on the site for DraftKings Pick 6, and Worthy's yardage total is the one that I wrote up the over for. I got it at 59.5 when I wrote the article last night. He's around 62.5, I think, on most of the books right now. Haven't had a chance to check the updated line on that. But the role for Xavier Worthy, I think, is really interesting. He's been a guy, as you mentioned, who they brought in to kind of stretch the field while Rashee Rice and Juju Smith-Schuster, guys like that, run underneath routes, Travis Kelce, and do the majority of the work to move down the field. Well, with Kelce declining, Rice suspended, Juju hasn't shown anything in years. I think Xavier Worthy is the guy that's going to play that underneath role while Rashee Rice is out. We saw it in weeks 13 through 17 last season, basically. His A-dot went way down, and he just became much more heavily involved in the offense as the underneath guy. So I think he's going to be involved. The two high safeties are obviously going to play a factor here. And I'm not necessarily expecting him to be the deep ball threat that he was kind of drafted to be for this offense, at least in the early going here, while they are without Rashee Rice. So I think Worthy's going to be the top option from a target standpoint. I think 62.5 yards is too low of a total for what he's going to do as the primary receiving option in this offense.
Yeah, I'm sitting. Go ahead, Jeff. I was going to say I'm sitting 58.5 right here on FanDuel, which is interesting. So you're saying buy that number, Keith?
Yeah, I'm buying Xavier Worthy as the primary target for Patrick Mahomes today.
All right, listen, I promise vibes. Here's my first vibes picks of the night. Give me the kicker. Give me Butker. Over 7.5 points. And I'd even go Dicker over 6.5 points. Good defenses, as we said. You know, a lot of drives stalled out. And while we're not quite mile high, we are half mile high in the stadium down there. Gives the kicker an extra yard or two. And, you know, I get two field goals, two extra points for the Chiefs. I could see that pretty easily.
I like
kicker,
it.
Yeah. Kicker props I'm given.
That's why we're here.
We're 9 minutes into the first ever show. We're giving kicker props. So I absolutely love that.
Write it down. It's cashing.
I do think. I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with being a little bit of an ugly game. I think some drives might stall out. The one prop I'm on, which I didn't expect to be on, and I also saw Justin Bales is on at our site as well. Is I like Will Dissly over 14.5 receiving yards at FanDuel. Just going back to how much too high coverage both of these teams played. And I wouldn't be hanging my hat on that so much if it wasn't about 60% of the time. And I don't think either of these defensive philosophies are really going to change. He actually led the Chargers in targets per route run last year against that too high coverage. Now I understand Keenan Allen's in the picture. But there's so much ambiguity, especially with these aging vets, that you have to wonder how much maintenance they had, if they're really to play for week one. I mean, hell, we saw the Amari Cooper debacle, hello and goodbye, in less than like 5 days for Las Vegas. So I think it'll be pretty telling, you know, after the first quarter to see how much Keenan Allen's actually playing and how much juice he has left in the tank. My one last thought is, and then we have to move on here, is I'm just curious, Keith and Jeff, how much, you know, Omarion Hampton you think we'll see? Obviously, I don't think Harbaugh wants, you know, 90% of snaps going on this kid right away. The Najee Harris situation kind of, you know, complicated things. But I'm seeing really nice totals for receptions here for Hampton. I mean, plus 154 for three catches, a crazy number here, plus 350 for four catches. While maybe that's a little bit of a stretch. You know, if there's going to be a bunch of checkdowns and nothing over the top, I mean, is Hampton receptions crazy, or am I just thinking too out of the box a little bit here?
I don't think that's crazy at all. I believe with Najee's injury that you alluded to there, Hampton is a first-round running back picked in the first round of the draft. That draft capital tells me he's the guy. He's at the top of the depth chart. Najee has not had a training camp. I think he's going to see at minimum 55%, maybe 60% of the running back touches today. So I am in on Omarion Hampton props. And the receiving angle, I like a lot as well.
Yeah, he's had 11 and a half carries, which I think is that if you think he's going to be the man, that's obviously way too low.
Yeah, this is part of the stuff that we can take advantage of going into the first week of the season. Like, we think we know some things, but we just don't. It's possible here that Hampton is the guy 60% of the time in the backfield. And like Jeff just said, 11 and a half would be way too low for a back with that type of workload.
All right, let's move to Sunday. The Commanders at home against the Giants, 6.5-point favorites right now. They opened, I think, at 7.5, so that line's come down a bit. Total sitting at 45.5. What do you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think just hand in hand here with the biggest storylines in this game probably is Brian Robinson getting shipped out to San Francisco, and I have a feeling we'll have a conversation about that game and that situation later. A lot of buzz about Bill. He was a best ball darling for 2.5 weeks, and I'm really not buying into him having a extremely meaningful role. I think they're going to lean on snaps from the veteran Austin Ekeler. I don't think that's crazy at all. I do think they like Chris Rodriguez. He had some meaningful touches last season as well. And I think you'll get Bill, as they call him. I think he'll see a couple of snaps, but I don't think his role is going to be the one that these best ballers were chasing up until like the seventh round a couple of weeks ago, which just got ludicrous. So I wrote up Austin Ekeler earlier this week over there at props. He was at 19.5 receiving yards. That number's up to 24.5 now. I still really like it. I feel like he's going to end up with about 30. I think Jaden Daniels, you know, has trust in him. You know, we'll check it down to him. He did miss some games with a concussion last year, but he was heavily involved. And out of all qualified running backs, Ekeler ranked 5th in the NFL in yards per route and 1st in yards after catch per reception among any running back with at least 50 routes. So, unless he just hit a wall and we're not aware of it, and I know he's aging, I think he's going to be heavily involved in the pass game. I love Ekeler receiving yards on Sunday.
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, vibes. I think they're going to try to squeeze one big year out of him, one last big year out of him. I mean, the window for any team is tight. I think they can compete, you know, certainly with Jaden Daniels, like, you know, their future is here and it's now. I mean, we're not that far removed from Ekeler being, you know, a first round fantasy pick, right? So maybe, you know, an Aaron Jones role, right? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that call a lot. Keith, where do you stand with this backfield and just kind of with this game in general?
Yeah, the backfield is definitely a tough situation to dissect. I think Chris Rodriguez is going to be involved. So his props are all very low as well. Another situation where if you get this right, as far as the usage goes in the backfield, you can find some really attractive numbers out there. We do need to talk about Deebo Samuel as well. I'm not sure what his role is going to look like, but we saw San Francisco get him involved in the running game a little bit. I wouldn't be shocked here if Washington has similar plans. Deebo is really friendly priced in DFS this week. So he's a guy that I've been digging into a little bit. I think he could have a real role here, certainly in the passing game, but also in the running game as well, which would be interesting and might further throw a wrench into our plans here when trying to pick a Commander's running back.
Yeah. I mean, guys, just look at these two numbers. Deebo's plus 195 to score and Chris Rodriguez is plus 260. One of those two guys is going to get the short yardage work. I don't think they want to run Jaden Daniels into the goal line like on week one. I just don't think that I can't see that happening. So I love both of those numbers. I think that's a great call. I think Debo's going to have to be involved in some gadgety ways and in some inside the 10 touches. But man, you know, better than 2-1 on Chris Rodriguez, who, you know, we've heard coach speak and we've seen him take some short yardage stuff, you know, in the past. And man, if you're feeling lucky and you think Washington will hammer down here, 10-1 for a first touchdown for Debo and 13-1 for Chris Rodriguez is pretty enticing.
I got, hey, you want more vibes? I gave you a kicker. Now I'm going to give you a parlay. So that's just, you know, I'm going to get kicked off the show before the 15-minute mark. I love bets like this. These are fun bets. Darius Slayton under 2.5 receptions matched with a Darius Slayton touchdown on FanDuel's at over plus 900, right? You know, Wilson loves chucking the ball. Slayton's a deep threat. They're going to try at least once to get the ball in Slayton's hands deep. Maybe they connect. Maybe we score a touchdown. I don't see him catching more than, well, I don't see him catching a lot of balls, obviously. Neighbors is going to be, you know, is the main guy there. So, I don't know. There's a little parlay for you, a little dumb parlay to throw out there. You know, be responsible, folks. Let's move on. Let's go to Jacksonville. Jaguars, Panthers. This game, you know, every other year you say this is a terrible game, ugly game. This game has, I think there's a lot going on in this game that, you know, we're going to find out a lot about both these teams. Jags are 3.5-point home favorites, 46.5 total. Anything jumping out at anybody here?
I don't know how to predict the winner here. I think there is a lot going on. I think this game is going to be one of two extremes. I think it's going to be terrible, or I think there's going to be a lot of points. You know, I was talking to you guys offline this week. I am high on a lot of these rookies, more than I usually am. And while it does feel a little like fishy to be all excited and gung-ho about all these rookies, I just think we're in a strange year where a lot of these, specifically first-round receivers, are being thrusted into serious roles where they have opportunities to walk into high volume, like 8 to 10 targets. I think Tet McMillan is one of them. And, you know, his yardage prop is priced appropriately. He's up to 65.5. I mean, listen, they got rid of Adam Thielen. Jalen Coker went on IR. They brought Hunter Renfrow back, who probably wasn't good enough to make this team if they didn't get rid of either one of those other two guys I just mentioned. So I understand you could say, oh, they'll throw the kitchen sink at him defensively. But all the buzz has been that he's the real deal in camp. And I think those personnel moves, well, especially getting rid of Thielen, kind of speaks volumes about where they are and how comfortable they are with McMillan. Yeah, I wish this 65.5 was a little bit lower, but I think he's going to get at least 8 targets on Sunday. I don't think that's crazy. Now, the thing that kind of deters me a little bit is I think Bryce Young's passing yards prop is super low. Yeah, 212.5. Again, are these books kind of like leaning towards his full historical 2024 season? He got so much better. I mean, statistically and on the eye test in the last like 6 weeks with Dave Canales, that I think maybe that number is a little bit low. And if you do think they play from behind a little bit, I think maybe, you know, if you want to run a little two leg with Bryce Young and Tet overs, I think that kind of makes sense with that little correlation as well. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, I think both of these offenses are actually two that could take massive steps forward this year. You made some really good points about Carolina. Bryce Young played really well down the stretch of last season. I mean, people were kind of writing him off after a rough rookie season, but he really showed some flashes at the end of last season. You add McMillan as a top 10 pick to that and has looked awesome in camp. I think there's definitely things to be excited about on the Panthers side. I also want to talk about the Jaguars side here because we have a situation that I feel like we've seen before in the past. Liam Cohen has taken over this team, and his previous situation, he had a former sort of failed, not living up to the hype, first overall pick in Baker Mayfield that he completely elevated to one of the most productive quarterbacks in the NFL. Obviously, the receiver room there in Tampa is loaded, but I think that Jacksonville has some stuff to be excited about as well. You talked about rookies exploding onto the scene. Brian Thomas Jr. was an incredible find for Jacksonville last season. Not just a deep threat that he was kind of projected to be, but a guy that was used all over the field in every situation and looks like a true alpha receiver here for Jacksonville. This brings us to Trevor Lawrence and whether he can take that next step forward in the way that Baker Mayfield did when he worked under Liam Cohen. I think the coaching change is a huge deal here. I'm excited about what Jacksonville has going on the offensive side of the ball. I think Trevor Lawrence can take that step. We know he has the talent, obviously. was a super hyped up recruit coming into college, had an outstanding college career, first overall pick. Like, this guy has all of the pedigree. Now I think he's in the right situation and he could take a huge leap forward with Brian Thomas Jr. in tow. Like, this offense can take a major step forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you like the Buccaneers offense from the last couple of years, you're going to love both of these teams' chances of putting up points this year. You know, back to Tet for a second. I think this, you know, we were talking before the show, me and Justin, about how the lines, the odds makers have seemed to have gotten a lot sharper over the years. And I think McMillan's yardage prop is a great example of it in the first game. I mean, that's 65 and a half. That's like, that's an 1,100 yard rookie season. You know, Nobody would have predicted an 1,100 yard rookie, receiving rookie season for any receiver out of college 5 years ago, right? But we're in like midseason form here, I think, with McMillan's prop. Not that it's a bad number, but it's much higher than I would have anticipated going into the first game of the season, no matter what camp report said, no matter what anything else said. I like this game a lot. I think that this is a game that could see a lot of fireworks. I really believe that.
Can we talk Travis Hunter? I just feel like the public is still apprehensive to bet him. 47 and a half is his current yardage line on FanDuel. 4.5 reception total, juice to the under. You want to talk about draft stock, draft equity. You want to talk about depth chart, schmep chart. That's fine. But he is listed as a reserve corner. So if you want to try to cherry pick a little bit of narrative and feel better about that, that's fine. I mean, there's a path that he plays 70% of the offensive snaps this week. And 47.
I think there's a path that he plays 90%. You don't trade up to get this guy to keep him on your bench. It makes no sense.
And if you want to develop your young quarterback and have a little job security as the head coach and make things feel all good, then you're going to use your weapon, right? So I also feel that apprehension a little bit, but 47 and a half, like,
it's low.
It feels low. It feels like I want to hammer some alt totals and just have a good Sunday, right? I mean, I think it's a great matchup. There'll be a lot of attention to Brian Thomas Jr. I'm more prone to take his over 47 and a half yards. I mean, he could do that with one catch, right? I don't know if I want to just mess with, over 4.5 at plus money here. But, man, I didn't think, Travis Hunter, before the lines came out a couple of days ago, I didn't think he'd be someone I'd be interested in. I expected him to have more of a Tet line, maybe somewhere in the middle there. But clearly there's some apprehension, and really that number hasn't moved quite a bit, that I'm probably going to jump on Travis Hunter.
Do you like that one, Keith?
I do like that one, yeah. I mean, it's an offense that I'm excited about. So I agree that this could be a shootout here with two offenses that can kind of trade blows. So game environment leans in his favor as well.
Speaking of offenses that blow, the Jets home against the Steelers. The Jets 2.5-point home dogs, 37.5-point total. This game is just the ugliest game on the schedule. I don't know. Anything that anyone likes here?
The beautiful thing about betting is you don't have to bet every game. you don't have to worry about it. There's just so much going on here. This is the ideal. We need to wait and see. I mean, I know those of you who are listening probably played best ball and probably have done more than one draft this season, but even Garrett Wilson's stock plummeted. I mean, he was going to the tail end of the third round a couple of days ago, which I think is kind of crazy. I know Justin Fields is not a good real life quarterback, but I also think of when he peppered DJ Moore when there was nobody else there at all. And he just had like half of Justin Fields' volume. I mean, it was crazy. So there's a lot of things that I want to wait and see here. I still feel uncomfortable about the Breece Hall situation. I just feel like there's still some smoke there and some things that aren't good. And I know he wants an extension and it just doesn't feel right. And there's been a lot of Braylon Allen steam. I feel like Breece Hall is a candidate to maybe get traded before the trade deadline. I want to see how that split works. I want to see Aaron Rodgers move. I want to see him move. Like, I don't know what else to say. I want to see Caleb Johnson. Is he really behind Kenneth freaking Gainwell? There's so much volatility here. And honestly, you can accidentally squeak over a 37.5 total, so I can't sit here and tell you to just pound the under here because it's football and random pick sixes and garbage time happen. So this is just an avoid for me. I could not find anything I liked here personally.
Volatility is a key word there. I think this is the most volatile game on both sides of the ball. We just don't really have an idea of what's going on here. The Jets backfield is a mess. It's a horrible matchup against a really tough Steelers defense. I'm with you. I don't see anything to like here. New quarterback in town as well on both sides. Like, we need to see some things. Like, it's a super low total. We have two historically unproductive offenses, or fantasy friendly offenses, at least. Like, there's not a lot to like here. But at the same time, there's talent on both sides of the ball too. So just pounding unders seems like a risky strategy in its own right, with the total being so low and all the lines being adjusted accordingly. I'm with you. I'm just staying away from this game.
I know it's a new team. I know we don't know what to expect. Justin Fields' rushing numbers at 42.5. I just quick looked. 16 out of his last 19 starts, he's exceeded that number. So it's worth noting, right? I mean, who knows what's going to happen here? But 42.5 for Fields, that seems a little low to me.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about the Justin Fields revenge game from anybody. So since we're the first football show ever this week, I figure we could say there's a Justin Fields revenge game. It was two seasons ago when, I mean, Keith, you're a Bears fan, right? Spoiler alert, we have to pick on Keith so he can decipher who's going to get all the volume in this Bears offense later this year. But yeah, it was two seasons ago with the whole Justin Fields, DJ Moore connection I alluded to. DJ Moore had a 38% first read rate. I mean, like, there's an outcome where if I'm picking anything here, it's going to be Garrett Wilson props. If you're like, gun ahead, give me some for this game, because I think there's a chance Fields just locks on to Garrett Wilson, because that's what he did with DJ Moore when he was the only guy in town. And that's not a great analogy. It doesn't exactly, you know, correlate step for step. But when you kind of zoom out, it's like he's by far their only playmaker on the outside. So that's
And to your point, Justin Fields' biggest weakness is getting through his progressions, right? Reading a defense and going through progressions. So to have design plays where he is simply targeting his best weapon makes a ton of sense to me. So
yeah. Best player on the field. Yes. I lean Jets, like, overall, like, in this game, for whatever that's worth. It ain't worth a lot. New England, the Patriots, home, 2.5-point favorites over the Vegas Raiders, 43.5 total. The game feels like it's going to be tight, close to the vest, but we do have some playmakers on the field. Anything jumping out there? Are we ready to jump on Trayvon Henderson yet, or are we going to wait?
Listen, as a Tennessee Titans fan, we're getting the full Mike Vrabel treatment, and I don't miss it whatsoever. I mean, listing this guy fourth on the depth chart, Vrabel is such an old school, just close to the vest. You can tell it's from the Belichick tree. Let's just say that, like, times a million, like on steroids. It's like, that's the persona Vrabel gives off. I'm hoping that we still at least like see 40% of the snaps for Henderson in week one. I think that's fair. Ramondre Stevenson, fine pro, just a guy when it comes to ceiling and talent. I think in a couple of weeks, we start seeing that shift a little more. I also don't know if Henderson's a guy that can take 80% of the carries at the NFL level yet. So I do think it will be a committee, but I think Henderson is a phenomenal football player, and I haven't hit any of his props yet. He has the second best anytime touchdown scoring prop here. It's higher than Stevenson on FanDuel, or lower, if you will. It's better. Better odds to score Henderson than Stevenson. I didn't know if I saw that coming. Keith, what are your thoughts on this one? Help me get through this here.
Yeah, struggling a little bit with this one as well. Excited about Drake May in the season that he showed in his rookie season. So I think there's some stuff to build on here for sure. The receiver room leaves something to be desired with an aging Stephon Diggs and not a lot else behind him. Hunter Henry is still a little bit of a useful guy, but I think Drake May can elevate some of these guys. I don't know if Demario Douglas or Kayshon Boutte can take a step forward, but it's interesting. It's something I have my eye on. Not sure that I'm quite ready to pull the trigger on this passing offense coming out of the gates week one. I do like Drake May, and I like his rushing ability. I have not looked at his rushing yards prop, but that would be something I think could be an angle for this game if I was forced to find a prop here. I agree with you that Trayvon Henderson is probably going to be the guy in the backfield here long-term. The talent supersedes Ramondre Stevenson, and I think he finds himself on the field more often than not in short order here, regardless of what the depth chart says. So if I was looking to a back, it would be Henderson props that I'd be targeting.
29.5.
Yep. 29.5. Where do you go with that, Keith?
Yeah, I mean, he can break off one run that
real quick.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not like this Raiders defense offers much resistance on the other side. So,
no, the problem with this game for me, I just feel like between Vrabel and Pete Carroll, this is going to be like war of attrition. You know, they're not, no chances are getting taken. I think this is just going to be, you know, come down to the last drive kind of game. You know,
almost rather just throw like a tenth of a unit on Henderson hitting a home run and hit him like plus 680 for 80 plus yards or something. Right. Like the ultimate sprinkle, because I think that will happen more than once here. And I did have the rushing attempts up here, almost a dead split. According to Vegas, 9.5 carries for Henderson, 11.5 for Stevenson, juice to the under. So right out the gate, it doesn't look like there will be a workhorse here. I mean, if we're talking talent, it's Henderson. Mike Vrabel is a guy who solely started bad football players over better football players because they were better blockers, like solely, like the only reason. So it might be a little bit frustrating. I kind of wish Henderson was drafted to a different offense so there would be more of a path, you know, to kind of see his explosiveness right off the bat. So pretty much a pass for me, boys.
All right, moving on to the game that's going to break everybody's heart when you install it in your three-team teaser. The Cardinals, 6.5-point road favorites in New Orleans. 42.5 total. I mean, this game, you know, no, everybody's got the Cardinals. Everybody's got the Cardinals here, which you can almost print a Saints victory right here, right? No, but really. But, I mean, is this not the classic week one trap game?
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm just looking at anytime touchdown scores. James Conner, you know, minus 165. Love James Conner. He's been the workhorse, right? I know a lot of TD props are juice now, but James Conner, minus 165. I could never lay that even in this matchup. Yeah, I mean, like, I have zero analytical approach on what I'm about to say, but it just has felt like we've seen Kyler and the Cardinals enough where there's some element where they just can't put the final rung of the ladder together to be a complete offense. They are just missing some continuity every year. And really, in terms of skill positions, nothing has really changed either. I mean, they're kind of running it back. You know, we still have Mike Wilson out there. You're going to have Marvin Harrison. Big question mark as to whether or not, you know, he's going to take that next step. How much of it was on Kyler? How much of it was on him last year? I feel like you can cherry pick information and blame one or the other, you know, for their shortcomings as well. So I just have a hard time figuring out what their identity is from year to year. And I don't even know if they know what their identity is. They kind of have an identity crisis every year and nothing to really kind of hang their hat on. And I think that kind of kills them in the end. And yeah, I wouldn't be shocked in NOLA too, Jeff. Like, that kind of adds to the here we go in the upset environment here as well.
I think there's a lot of wish casting going on with this Cardinals offense. Like, people like the pieces and they want to see success from this team, but Kyler Murray has not quite lived up to the hype as a first overall pick. Marvin Harrison Jr. had a disappointing rookie season. So, like, yes, there's like explosive, exciting skill position guys here, but I'm not sure they're ready to take that step here. Traveling on the road to New Orleans in week one, definitely not the situation where I want to be jumping on. I think the one constant in the offense is Trey McBride. If I was looking at anything, Trey McBride receptions feels like the safest route to go here. I'm aware of the potential of Marvin Harrison Jr. and how good of a prospect he was coming into the league. I'm not ready to jump on it and think that suddenly we're going to see a drastic shift from what we saw last season in week one. Maybe he gets there by the end of the season, but not ready to get there yet in week one.
What do you guys think about Olave, 51.5? I saw a quote from Rattler. He said his job is to get the ball into Chris Olave's hands.
Quarterback plays the biggest question mark here, right?
Right.
Like, probably the worst quarterback room in the NFL.
Sure.
But two talented receivers in Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave. Olave left a lot of games early with concussion issues last season. If he's beyond that, I think he's one of the best receivers in the NFL. I like the number here, even though the quarterback play is a little bit concerning. He's just a super talented guy, and I think can win in any matchup. The Cardinals defense is not anything to be afraid of. So I like the matchup. I like the receiver. Questions around the quarterback would be my biggest concern.
Let's go to another game that has trap written all over it. In Cleveland, the Browns, 5.5-point dogs against the always quick-to-start Cincinnati Bengals. I don't think they've won a Week 1 game since 17-11.
I have such a hard time trusting either of these teams right now. I do want to just quick throw in that my favorite price in the last game would be Juwan Johnson anytime score. I think it was 4-1. I mean, like another guy that, much like Olave, when he's actually healthy, I'd like to see them with a real quarterback. I'd like to see them healthy and with a real quarterback, but I don't think we're going to get that wish this year. Anyway, Cincy and Cleveland, man. I mean, Joe.
This, before this you look, before you look, what's Flacco's yardage prop?
218.5.
Higher.
Higher. 241.5.
God, if that does not speak volumes about how freaking bad the Bengals defense really is. And probably a trailing game script. I mean, at least to some degree. Then again, it's only 5.5-point spread. So who knows? I think that Cleveland Browns defense is
not terrible.
Right. I think there's a misconception there that the entire team's a joke when really it's just the front office and nobody to play quarterback ever. But Joe Flacco had to start this season. He was by far the best short-term solution, at least for 4 weeks or 5 weeks or whatever it is. And then let the chaos begin. And then let all the talking heads who have done all these football shows before us talk about Shedeur Sanders again and whoever else they decide to throw in there. But I haven't looked – this was a game I want to look at because I do think they will be trailing at some point. And, you know, I actually wrote up Jerry Jeudy, and his line went up too. I think I wrote him up at 58.5. That's actually exactly what he averaged during the Joe Flacco starts last year, was 58.5 yards per game. I don't love the line. That's probably a pass for me, but you're getting a really soft defense in a game where, you know, they're projected to trail a little bit here, so I don't hate that. I'd rather bet Njoku, though, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he is dynamite with Flacco. All right, talk to me about Njoku, boys. First of all, Jeff, you got vibes on Njoku? Is that where we're going?
I like Njoku. I also like Tillman. I mean, before he went down last year, he was out Jerry Jeudying Jeudy. 12 targets, 9 targets, 11 targets, 8 targets, week 7 through 11, and then he got hurt in week 12. So, and his he's down at 37, 39.5. Where is he?
Let's see. Yeah, 39.5.
I would probably, if I was betting this game, these props, I would probably go Tillman, Njoku, Jeudy in that order of what I like best for hitting that number. Njoku, I mean, everywhere you look this week, people are like hyping this Flacco and Njoku, you know, combo. So it's not going under the radar. Hence the 47.5 number on Njoku, you know.
I will leave this with you, Keith, and then pass you the torch. Njoku and Jeudy across the whole season last year both had a 21% target share. I don't have those numbers sorted from the Flacco starts, you know, but still pretty solid numbers. That was with Elijah Moore in the fold as well. So I do think those are going to be the guys to probably get, you know, a healthy amount of targets. I don't know, like just off the top of my head, I would say 6 targets is completely fair for Njoku with room to grow for sure.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Njoku with Joe Flacco as his quarterback. He's kind of taken a step forward in the past couple of seasons anyway with poor quarterback play. Some of the worst play in the league after Deshaun Watson went down last season until Joe Flacco took over. When Joe Flacco took over, things just went through the roof for Njoku. A couple of seasons ago when they played together, they put up some huge numbers as well. So I'm super excited about David Njoku. What's his number to score a touchdown? Because I'm interested in that as well. If there's some pretty solid plus money there, plus 150 or so,
plus 250.
Yeah, I'm interested in that number. I think he's an excellent goal line target, a big body, obviously. I don't think Jerry Jeudy is all that great. So I like Jeff's lean. I'm leaning to Tillman between the wide receivers as well. But Njoku definitely the guy I'm really excited about here.
What about on the other side of the ball? Obviously Cincinnati is one of the strongest offenses in the league. Do you believe that Chase Brown, that they're going to feed him like they did at the end of the year last year? I tend to. If you do, his rushing receiving combined is 91.5, which would probably be a little on the lower side if you think he's going to get all the action.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best roles in the NFL last season, like Christian McCaffrey type usage in this Cincinnati backfield. I see no reason that he wouldn't continue in that role. it's an offense that we know can use that can move the ball with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, some elite wide receivers as well to take some of the attention away from him, give him some lighter boxes to work against. I mean, he's competing with Samaje Perine and Taj Brooks for carries. Like, those two names do not inspire any troubles that Chase Brown's going to see a reduced role here. So very much in on him. The role is as elite as it gets.
I will say this. If we see a similar defensive philosophy from Cleveland as we did last year, the Browns played the fourth most man coverage and the second most single high. So, I mean, the other caveat here is we're just seeing massive divisional games off the rip. We're seeing Cincy and Cleveland. We saw the Eagles and Cowboys. We're seeing the Chargers and Chiefs and freaking, you know, another country, which is crazy. So maybe they give, you know, maybe they're preparing for a different look or two. But if you're talking about Bengals, you know, skill players, if Cleveland continues to play man and single high, you know, Zach Taylor is a smart enough play caller to move around whoever he wants to get whatever matchup anytime he wants. It's just going to come down to efficiency. I'm sure everybody and their mothers are going to be betting any kind of Jamar Chase that they can. What is his actual number here, by the way? I didn't like really look into him. 84.5. I mean, we've seen much higher from him, you know, mid-season last year. T. Higgins, 63.5. Now, I haven't kept up on Cincy beat writers and really dug into the weeds on Cincinnati specifically yet, but it is worth noting that there was a practice last week where T. Higgins allegedly, quote-unquote, limped off the field. To what degree, I don't know. Again, it's week one, so if he's not 100%, there's probably going to be a bunch of ambiguity and no clarity, but they're not going to, you know, put a guy out there to play 98% of the snaps who has an injury history. It feels fishy. It feels chalky. I'm surprised Jamar Chase's number isn't a little higher. Maybe by Sunday, that thing will get steamed up to like 88.5 or something like that. But if I am leaning over or under, I would say higher than 84.5 for Jamar Chase based on everything we know.
Denzel Ward is obviously a really tough matchup, but moving him around the formation is something that they can do. Ward doesn't always follow receivers, so that's a great call there. I think that makes Chase my favorite lean as well, outside of Brown. Of anything in this game, I prefer Chase Brown, but I don't mind leaning to Chase after that.
Just a general strategy question for both of you and Jeff. I know you say you're a vibes guy, but I know you're in the fantasy streets. What's it been? 4 decades you've been playing fantasy football, and I know you play a little best ball. And Keith, you know, we've been doing a lot of shows. How much stock do you put into wide receiver cornerback matchups, guys? I mean, I feel like it's such an overblown thing with just how formations move. And yes, you know, there are corners that do a lot of shadowing, but it's almost like a lost art of one guy solely following the other guy for the entire game. Taking nothing away from Denzel Ward and those reps that he has against Jamar Chase will be tough. But, like, personally, I've weighted that less and less over the last, like, 5 or 6 years probably. It's fun to look at, and sometimes it makes you think twice about things. That's just my input. But how do you guys take stock into that?
I only care long term. And so I don't care if the receiver that I like is going up against a top cornerback. I do care if they've been going at each other for 7 years and there's a direct, like, you know, Mike Evans and Lattimore, right?
Yeah.
Like, Lattimore owns Evans. Like, that I believe. And I won't play Evans, like, if he's going up against Lattimore. But, like, as far as, like, week to week and, you know, two guys have never seen each other before, I don't care.
It's pretty far down the list for me, too. I think any information we can get is good information. But as far as prioritizing it, it's not something that's at the top of my list.
All right. We like another to talk, game, so I know we have to move on.
Here's a game not at the top of anyone's list, although, again, this game has sneaky shootout potential, I think. The Colts at home, 1.5-point favorites over the Dolphins, 46.5 total. Again, this is a game where, like, you know, the Colts are coming into this game with Daniel Jones now as a quarterback. We don't know what to expect. The Dolphins are coming in, you know, same cast of characters, but somehow we have no idea if this team is going to put up 550 points or three of them are going to be on the bench by week 8. So good luck.
Yeah, that Jonathan Taylor number, you guys see that? That is freaking bonkers, man. -185 to score is just like, there's no point of ever clicking that button. there's just not. I'm with you. I'm glad he said that, Jeff. I haven't done my entire DFS research yet. I don't know what ownership projections look like or anything like that. But if there's one game that's kind of just stuck in the middle that has a chance to shoot out, I think it's this one. They're inside Lucas Oil Stadium. There's been so much negative stigma attached to Miami. And yeah, some of it's justified.
Most of it's justified, I think.
There's a lot of bullshit going on there. Let's be real. Right. But there's a chance that they are in better shape than the public perception. There's a chance that they are fairly healthy. And, you know, Indy plays a ton of cover three. I have a bunch of two overs cover three stats from last year. And I don't feel like pulling it up. All I'm going to tell you is Tua had like one of the best adjusted completion percentages against cover three last year. Because I don't feel like reading this, you know, word for word and being robotic. And I have too many windows up, and I'm a novice and start for the show. So I'm not going to like do that verbatim. But there's like, if you're going to invest in Miami, it's got to be earlier in the season. Now we're getting a competitive game in a dome. And as far as I know, everybody will play. So like, this is kind of, to me, screaming contrarian DFS stack. And listen, it'll be Sunday night and I'll probably be complaining about it and tilting on some showdown. But I'm going to be invested in this game in DFS. I don't know if I'll be able to find a bet. But I agree with you. I think it's interesting for some points here, guys.
Do you have a lean on Tyreek Hill versus Jalen Waddle? I think with Jonnu Smith out of town, Jalen Waddle becomes pretty interesting. Tyreek, who knows what's going on with him and that situation? I think Waddle is really interesting to me. Do you have a lean there, Justin?
Yeah. A guy who I just long-term I've had trouble investing in. Talent's been great. Past couple of years, the situations and all the variables, I feel like there's been a lot of bad timing. Either he's been hurt or Tua's been hurt or someone else has been hurt or things have just been bad. So from a talent perspective, yeah, I think it's great. And the Colts play like the most cover three in the NFL, at least they did last year. So again, I'm just anticipating most of the blueprint staying the same and nothing, you know, doing a 180. But Tyreek was pushing a 30% target share and like a 37 or 38% first read rate against cover three. So I think that matters too, but yes, I think Waddle, but then you got to take into consideration the oblique thing, all the off the field garbage. Oh, he's not a captain now, whatever. Everything's just weird. I think there's a chance for this game to go crazy. Again, I could be very wrong here, but week one, especially in DFS, I know it's a betting show, but you can still, you know, hammer some alt totals, have a little fun. I think this is the week to kind of take advantage of all those gray areas that, you know, a lot of people are hesitant to, you know, to take advantage of.
Yeah, if you think Miami's going to right the ship, you're not going to see 68.5 for Hill. You're not going to see 57.5 for Waddle. You're not going to see 30.5 for Achane the rest of the season for receiving props. You know, if they come out and put five touchdowns, you're not going to see any of those numbers again for the rest of the year.
You made a good point, Keith, about Jonnu Smith. As much as it helps Waddle, I think for sure we're going to see more Achane in the slot. And I think they have a little trust in Ollie Gordon, who should get real run. Ollie Gordon, another, you know, 17th round darling in best ball the last 5 weeks, Jeff, for Miami. But yeah, Keith, I mean, talk to me more about Waddle before we move on here in Miami. Like, what are your thoughts? How are you going to play this one?
Just, I think a player that's underperformed his talent over the last couple of seasons, has dealt with a lot of injuries in his career, as you alluded to, but a guy that I think could take a step forward. Kind of lost that short yardage behind the line of scrimmage role to Jonnu Smith last season. If he gets that back, I think we have to be looking at his upside in a different light. A guy who could see a target share up around 30% if things go well, where he could be next to Tyreek Hill more than the number two behind Tyreek Hill is my only point there. It's yet to be seen. Maybe it's something I try to jump on early, but I am definitely keeping an eye on Jalen Waddle and his usage and production here early in the season. I did want to touch on Jonathan Taylor a little bit because I think this is a fantastic situation for him with the quarterback change from Anthony Richardson to Daniel Jones. The touchdown upside is through the roof, as you proved by showing his odds to score in this game. His rushing yards number is a little bit low in this spot, in my opinion. I'm seeing it under 80 in almost every spot. I'm seeing as low as 76.5 out there. This is a workhorse running back type. And if the Colts can control this game, I think it's going to be on the ground more than anything else. And Jonathan Taylor could be live for 20 carries in this spot. Maybe Miami comes in and their offense goes back to what it was two seasons ago and they run them out of the stadium. But if Indy's able to keep this game close, I really like that rushing yard number for Jonathan Taylor.
Let's go to the game that a lot of people, I'm sure, have circled for some fireworks. Falcons at home, 1.5-point dogs to the Bucks, 47.5 total, highest that we got for Sunday's main slate. A lot of players, everyone's favorite rookie receiver, What do you think? Anything jumping out?
I'm excited to see what Michael Penix can bring to this team for a full season.
Big question, right?
Big. And we saw glimpses of kind of floor and ceiling last year through a couple starts. I think he had that one big 300-yard game. I don't think it can be much worse than what Kirk Cousins was giving that team. So I'll leave it at that. On the flip side, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me seven seasons in a row, Kyle Pitts, right? Something like that. I won't be going there. Egbuka, another case where we're seeing 57.5. He kind of got the Tet treatment. The line's not as high because obviously Mike Evans doesn't exist on Carolina. Obviously, there's not going to be Chris Godwin. Kate Otten's a little banged up as well. General, long-term, I love Egbuka. I will probably still bet this number. I got to see if there's a better one out there. I'm just showing you the 57.5 one here. I think he's awesome.
He is awesome. And if you think he's jumping right into that Godwin role, which he apparently is, I mean, I think this to me is probably the best ladder opportunity on the slate for receptions or yards for Egbuka. I mean, you get him 7 receptions, 210, 8 receptions, 370, 9 receptions, 630. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, this is an Atlanta defense who they have a couple of household names, but we've seen them gotten absolutely destroyed a couple of games last year. And one was the Tampa Bay game. I know history doesn't always repeat itself. But no, I love that call a lot. One guy I'm trying to see if there's props on real quick is, man, can anybody find me a Ray McLeod number in the industry? I got to look at some other books. Hey, he's going to have a real role, and he was actually good last year. So I am actually going to be on the hunt for a Ray McLeod line after this game. Anyway, Keith, talk to me here.
Drake London is the guy I have circled in this matchup. Tampa Bay for several years has been a pass funnel defense in that they are extremely stout against the run, but very leaky against the pass. We've seen Drake London put up some massive target numbers over the past several seasons. He's used a ton underneath. Kyle Pitts is nowhere to be found. Ray McLeod is one of the names that he's in competition with targets for. It is very clearly Drake London as the alpha in this wide receiver room, pass catcher room in general. Darnell Mooney is coming off of an injury. There's no competition for targets from what I see. For Drake London, he should have a massive game in the spot.
Jeff, I will say this, and I'll throw this over to you, and then you could switch games or piggyback on this. But, you know, fairly healthy passing prop line for Baker Mayfield, 242, all things considered. But when you take a zoom out here, the volume should be Mike Evans at Egbuka. You know, Kate Otten, a little banged up, not a volume guy either. Where else would these passing yards go to? How many receivers is he going to actually be throwing the ball to on Sunday? So I think it warrants Egbuka even more. Even if that line gets up to 60.5, I still think you could hit it. And
I think it's a simple question to me.
Yeah.
Like this, we know that this offense works. We know that Egbuka he was awesome in Ohio State. And he's looked awesome, like beyond awesome in preseason. They can't stop talking about him. Cross out his name and put Chris Godwin at 4.5 receptions and 57.5 yards, and you are all over that, right?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's probably just some apprehension and some hesitancy with the rookies in these situations. But I do think we're in an anomaly year where we didn't even get to Matthew Golden yet. And to a lesser degree, we didn't talk about briefly Amari Cooper retiring, but Dante Thornton, that line was 19.5, so up to 24.5. This guy could be running another rookie receiver to, little bit less pedigree, a little bit less like highly touted prospect, but another guy who these guys are all going to be playing 65% of the snaps at a minimum on Sunday. And I just kind of think in recent years, it's kind of unprecedented to have so many guys in such big roles right off the bat that it does feel a little bit uncomfortable. But again, this is another one that we could be looking back next Friday on the show, and we're like, why the hell didn't we throw two units on it, Jake?
Yep, yep. Let's go to Denver, Mile High, Broncos' biggest favorite of the week. 8.5-point favorites against the Titans, 42.5 total. I'm gonna tell you the one thing I love right off the bat. J.K. Dobbins, anytime touchdown, 155.
Yeah, how are you guys, making out this Mike Shanahan-esque depth chart, if you will, and all this running back
I see it. I'll tell you exactly how I see it. I see this is Sean Payton. I see J.K. Dobbins equals Mark Ingram. R.J. Harvey equals Alvin Kamara. Rinse, repeat, and that's what he was going to want to do. He's going to each guy's going to have their role, and they're going to be a little bit interchangeable when it comes down to it, as evidenced by they're both at plus 155 with their touchdown prop. But I think he's going to use them both. And, you know, Dobbins, despite, you know, I think he has two robotic legs at this point, he is still, you know, I mean, the numbers he put up last year were solid, you know, and I don't think Sean Payton brought Dobbins in to not have him play. I don't think he drafted Harvey to not have him play. I think he's looking at, you know, a legitimate two-headed monster here. And I think they're going to try to get Dobbins, like, going immediately in this game. It's a perfect game to do so. Home against the Titans.
Keith, I think by week 7, R.J. Harvey turns into a unanimous league winner in every format whatsoever. I think Dobbins will be involved early. I think you're right. It's going to be kind of a 1A, 1B. But I think the cream will rise to the top eventually just as he gets more comfortable. But I love that call for week 1 for sure. I love that anytime touchdown call.
Dobbins was surprisingly efficient last season in LA. I will say that. So while the legs may not be fully intact, there's still some juice left there. So I don't disagree with you that Harvey is probably the more talented of the two backs and eventually has the larger share of the backfield. But I'm kind of on Jeff's side here that Dobbins is going to remain involved. Payton likes to use his two backs. So I think we're looking at a split backfield here for at least a good while.
If there's anything positive to say about last year's version of the Titans, when they were healthy, their run defense was really good. They were a pass funnel. Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat. There were just some pretty low rushing props for the heaviest favorite of the week. So I think there's an outcome where they both get there, Dobbins and Harvey. So
yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. 43.5 for Dobbins, 37.5 for Harvey. Parlaying them together might be let's see what that looks like.
That's interesting. Yeah,
it's +217 or whatever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, one of them is certainly going over that number, assuming this game plays the way we expect it to play, right?
Yeah,
if I'm right, they both go over.
And you know, as a Tennessee supporter, you know, I hope, you know, to the highest powers out there that this game is competitive and Cam Ward's the real deal. And I think he will be at some point. I think this is a maybe worst case situation first week going 2 mile high against a Denver team who has pretty much put together arguably the best defense in the league, top 5 unit for sure. I mean, it's going to be tough sledding for sure. That being said, and we talk about wide receiver cornerback matchups, and Ward has developed some nice chemistry with Calvin Ridley. You know, that being said, I do think Brian Callahan is a good play caller, a guy who worked with Matthew Stafford, a guy who worked with Joe Burrow. And he kind of got the shaft, you know, with Will Levis and a bunch of terrible free agent signings thrown together and said, here you go. Good luck. They're actually trying to build something in Tennessee now, and they got a little help with the way the end of last season shook out and getting Cam Ward. Now, I think it might take some time. Another rookie, and I just sound so fishy saying all this, but I've been kind of pounding on the table about Elik Iomanner since he was drafted. And surely but slowly, he kind of started getting better reps and getting better reps. And then he started running with the ones. And now he's listed as the starter opposite Calvin Ridley ahead of Van Jefferson, which is the right move because Van Jefferson stinks. And he had a terrible preseason. 23.5 receiving yards. I don't expect the Titans offense to look even like good in this situation. But the offensive line is vastly improved. That I think 23.5 is a really nice line for Iomanner. And I think for whatever duration of time that Patrick Surtain deals with Calvin Ridley, they will have to scheme some other things, especially if the ground game isn't there. So I love that number for Elik Iomanner. And add another rookie to the list, man. I might have to put like a rookie parlay in this week.
anything you like?
Curious Justin's thoughts on the backfield for Tennessee as the resident Titans fan. It appears to me that Tony Pollard kind of has it all to himself. It's obviously one of the toughest possible landing spots here with a rookie quarterback. So definitely not a good spot. But if just looking at the role alone, Pollard really looks like he could see a huge chunk of the usage here.
He can, and I'm kind of gravitating more towards his receiving yards number. If you just kind of take game script, he's a capable receiving back. I think that's one thing that people have a wrong perception about Tony Pollard. He actually had a really nice year last year too. 14.5 receiving yards. As soon as we get off the show, this bet's going in. You take game script into consideration, and he's probably going to play 85% of the snaps with Tajay Spears on IR. I think that has turned into one of my favorite bets of the day right off the bat. Right here.
That was the number that I had in mind when I threw that to you. Just because obviously Chestnut is there, but he's not very talented. Why wouldn't they just run Pollard out there for 85% of the snaps and be done? Yeah. And if he has that role, then assuming that they're trailing late in the game like we think they're going to be, there's going to be all kinds of dump-off opportunities for Pollard.
Before we move on, I was hoping that Washington would have just ended up cutting Brian Robinson because that was an ideal fit with Spears on IR. Would have been bad for Tony Pollard owners. I think it's his back heel for 4 weeks for sure.
Awesome.
Speaking of Brian Robinson, we may see more of him than anyone wants Sunday in Seattle. Seahawks 1.5-point home underdogs right now to the Niners, 43.5 total. I just did see McCaffrey on the field for warm-ups this afternoon, so he's back on the practice field. We may see him. We may not see him. I would happily donate my calf if you would like it. But, yeah, this game, again, I'm a little surprised. I mean, I think it was 2.5 yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, and then the McCaffrey news came out. I'm a little surprised to see the Seahawks as dogs here. I think the Niners, I don't know. I mean, with no McCaffrey, that changes everything. But there's something about this team that is 5-12 doesn't surprise me.
McCaffrey with the calf issue, McCaffrey calf, Brian Windhorst meme. I mean, it's all adding up. Again, thankfully for betting, you know, we don't have to get invested here. For DFS, that is going to be a critical point of the slate because if you don't play the guy, it just seems like he's going to score three times, right? So we'll see, man. I do think that Sam Darnold and Mike McDonald, and I just don't think they were getting enough respect throughout the offseason. I know Darnold had one good season. He was in an amazing offense with a great play caller and a great offensive line and Justin freaking Jefferson in Minnesota. But I'm kind of with you, Jeff. I'm not sure if I'd label them favorites. I do think the line is probably right, but I think there's a realistic shot that with all of the, you know, lack of training camps that the Niners have, like they haven't had nearly close to a full camp out of Juwan Jennings, right? I mean, McCaffrey's been in and out of the lineup. I'm a little worried about San Fran on the road too. So there's no props in this game that I'm on, but gun to head, I would probably take Seattle at even money if I'm putting any bets in.
Yeah, I don't like anything in this game really either, especially on the San Francisco side with the McCaffrey news kind of convoluting the situation even further. Juwan Jennings, obviously, without a training camp, as he held out for a contract, got some incentives added to his deal. Good for him. Kind of takes away from Ricky Pearsall and his projection that was looking pretty solid. Even with Ayuk still on the sidelines, I don't think I can invest in the San Francisco passing game here. And then McCaffrey dealing with the injury, Brian Robinson new in town, just not touching anything San Francisco wise and not excited about anything on the Seattle side either.
The only thing on the Seattle side that I'm a little bit interested in is, and this again, this is a guess, it's a lean, what's the backfield going to split going to be like? Is it Walker's backfield with Charbonnet spelling him, or is it going to be 50-50? If you lean 50-50, then you got to love the under on Walker, both carries at 14.5 and yards at 62.5, and the over on Charbonnet at 30.5 yards, 7.5 carries. I've been hearing different things, you know, from different people about what this backfield is going to look like. But if this game stays close, my lean, my thought, my guess, I mean, Charbonnet last year looked like the better back. Never mind, you know, the second back. So I kind of like the idea of, you know, you want to get fancy, you want to play a stupid parlay, under on Walker, overs on Charbonnet. I think, you know, if one hits, the other hits.
You know, they have this infatuation and kind of, Keith, how you mentioned with Arizona, where they want a bell cow back. And Kenneth Walker's an amazing talent, but hopefully there's some really intelligent analytical people in that office who are smarter than the three of us that realize we just can't run Kenneth Walker under the ground. Like, give Charbonnet at least 35% of the touches and keep them both healthy. Doesn't seem like such a bad deal to me. So I'm thinking that might be a little bit more of the philosophy shift, and you're seeing 30.5 right here on the board on Friday for Zach Charbonnet. So I'm thinking that might be a little bit of an indicator that might be the direction they're going in. And maybe they play with like a two-touchdown lead, God forbid, in the second half, and they're just cruising with Charbonnet instead of Kenneth Walker. So interesting stuff there in the backfield for sure.
All right, over to Green Bay for what might just be the game of the week, although it's interesting, again, in the DFS streets, not a lot of talk about this game. Packers at home, 2.5-point favorites over the Lions, 47.5 total. A lot of good players in this game. Micah Parsons, obviously, not with the Packers, changes things up a little bit probably on the defensive side and where the Lions can attack. There is one thing that I really like in this game, and I'm going to say it. I like everything Jahmyr Gibbs. I think there's a real possibility that this is not a 50-50 backfield split this year, that this is Gibbs' backfield. Montgomery is, like, you know, in there to spell him. And if you believe that, I mean, everything Gibbs all until everyone catches up. What do you think about that?
Go ahead, Keith.
It's still a little bit of a split. Gibbs is clearly the more talented back, the more explosive guy. I'm with you that his role should be increasing. I still see David Montgomery as involved here, though. It may not be the 50-50 that we've seen over the past couple of years. Maybe we lean more 65-35 than we have in seasons past. The one thing that I do think is Montgomery is going to be involved at the goal line. He's plus 150 or over that to score. That's my favorite lean in this game. Gibbs is going to score plenty of touchdowns as well. He has the ability to score from anywhere on the field that David Montgomery doesn't necessarily have. I also don't think they want to take their much more talented back and pound him into the line of scrimmage when they're inside the 5-yard line. So that David Montgomery goal line role is what I feel most confident about. Not that he's going to have every inside the 5 carry, but I do think he's going to get plenty of those opportunities. Seeing a plus number on him here to score against a defense that just traded away their premier interior lineman to get Micah Parsons, which is a fantastic trade for them, obviously, but it does take away from the middle of that defense. I think that the Lions are going to be able to run the ball pretty much at will here against the Packers. David Montgomery to score looks really nice.
Another weird dynamic, just having another massive divisional game off the bat is, you want to kind of...
It's a theme this year, for sure. You touched on it earlier in the show. That's definitely a new development. So I don't know if that's the plan going forward, but definitely the theme this year.
Yeah, because on one shoulder, you want to preserve a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs till the second half, if that means only giving him 65% of the touches in week one. At the flip of the coin, though, Jeff, this could be the biggest game of the season for your football team, and you might need him out there for 90% of the snaps. And, you know, that's just a dilemma, and I'm curious to see how these different philosophies will pay out.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I remember, is Montgomery, like last year, he was on the field for every first drive? Does that sound right? Or am I making that up?
It seems like they alternated drives more often than not, for sure.
But I think Montgomery started. I think Montgomery was always the listed starter, if I remember correctly.
I think we started to see that shift a little bit towards the end of the season. And I agree with you that Gibbs will be on the field first more than Montgomery this season.
And I'll tell you, right, if I'm watching this game live and I see Gibbs on the field for the first snap from scrimmage, I am running to bet those props.
Live betting has just changed the game, right? I mean, if there's something you can key in on early, and Keith, you're a big advocate of live betting as well, you can totally take advantage of some weird things that are hanging around on the board. But just quickly, looking at the Green Bay side, I wrote up Josh Jacobs earlier this week, and another guy who I'm sure the Packers don't want to run into the ground in week one again, because he's just had such heavy workloads the last couple of seasons with multiple teams. They can't keep anybody healthy behind him. Marshawn Lloyd, last year's best ball darling, everyone kind of decided to get back on him this year. He's dinged up every other week, unreliable. So I like the 71.5 number for Josh Jacobs quite a bit. I mean, he forced over 50 missed tackles last year, gained almost 60% of his yards after contact. At home, I like that too. I'm fine with Josh Jacobs over 71.5. I think
The spread a little bit?
Yeah.
Green Bay being favored here kind of seems – I know they're home. I know they just added Micah Parsons, but come on. Favored over the Lions? Like,
I feel like part of this is Ben Johnson not being there. I think that people are, Ben Johnson's not there. This team's not going to have the offense. I think that's worth a point in bettors' minds, I think, whether it's truly worth a point or not.
And that's fair. Super happy to have him in Chicago. The best coach the Bears have ever had, in my opinion. I expect great things from Ben Johnson. It's a significant loss to the Detroit offense. However, he's been there, and this offense has been together for a very long time. Right. I don't think they're suddenly just going to crap the bed because Ben Johnson isn't calling the plays.
I agree. I don't think so either.
The classic home team's getting 3 and a little half a point for Ben Johnson. I don't know. I am curious to see that play out as well. What have you done for me lately? The last time we saw Detroit, they got boat raced by the Commanders in the playoffs too. So, that might add a little bit in there as well, but also like no one's talking about, I know it's not his throwing hand, but the Jordan Love procedure he had done. I was a little more concerned about that. I haven't heard anybody really bring it up, but, again, I want to really like Matthew Golden, another rookie receiver who by default, Jaden Reed, I don't know if he practiced today, but he didn't practice earlier this week. He's messed up. Christian Watson will forever be messed up. And Romeo Doubs is Romeo Doubs. So riddle me this 48.5 line for Matthew. Someone talk me out of 48.5 for Matthew Golden. I know that this is not like a high volume for any specific receiver, but draft capital is the first time since 1930, I'm exaggerating, that Green Bay drafted a receiver in the first round. So are they going to get this guy the freaking ball or not, guys?
You would think, right? I mean,
I hope they're favored in the shootout. I mean,
this is, you know, Matthew Golden to me is like the stereotypical, like, best ball player in that, you know, when you draft your best ball teams all summer long, you could make an upside case for every single player that you draft. Then if you jump into a best ball draft in 4 weeks, like a midseason draft, after round six, you're like, holy shit, everybody sucks. Right. And so Matthew Golden to me feels like, you can make such an upside case for this guy. I got to see it to believe it. I'm not as bullish on him as I am on Igbuka or on Hunter right off the jump, because I don't feel like they need him to be the alpha here. It'd be nice if he was. They don't need it. I don't think they're going to force him the ball, but again, who the hell knows? 48.5 is a good number. That's a good number.
Right. I think the quarterback questions kind of put him in the tier behind Igbuka and some of the other rookies for me as well. Justin talked about the hand injury to Jordan Love. We're not sure that he's 100% healthy. He struggled at times last season, and he was dealing with injury last season as well. So we still don't quite know exactly what Jordan Love is, I would say. Is he an elite quarterback? I'm not ready to say that yet. Is he a starter in the league? Probably. He's looked that part at least, or at least flashed upside to that. But I'm not sure that he's in the elite tier of quarterback.
I think you like Golden and you like Jacobs. I think you got to choose one. I don't think they're both going to get there, right? Back to your point of like driving Jacobs on the ground, he seems like Derrick Henry's little brother, basically. And I think given the opportunity, I think you will see 30 carries out of Jacobs. They would love to do that, I think. That means that they're winning this game 20-10.
It's funny because he was super inefficient a couple of years ago, and he's just such a volume guy, you know? Like, and I see that. It just all looks appealing, and maybe I'm just stuck in that best ball mind. And I agree with you, Keith. I'm not ready to label Jordan Love even like a top 10 quarterback. And we're in a good era of quarterbacks, so there's so much talent. But that Tucker Kraft, 39.5 line too, a guy who has rapport, real game situation rapport with Jordan Love, and has got just complete rave reviews all summer ever since he took that job right away from Luke Musgrave, which I don't think was ever the plan. I think he stole that job with, you know, how he developed and became this tight end for Green Bay. Maybe Tucker Kraft is the play at 39.5 instead of Matthew Golden. Or maybe it's just a pass because I'm on Jacobs. Like you said, Jeff, where are the points coming from, right? Like, where's the volume? It's got to be Jacobs. I'm talking myself back into this here. Trust you.
I like the Jacobs lean the best. That would be my lean. Yep.
All right. We got one more game on the main slate here. Rams at home, for whatever that's worth, in Los Angeles against the Houston Texans. Rams are field goal favorites, 43.5 total. What do you guys – this is a
– Boy.
Who's running the ball for Houston?
Is Matthew Stafford healthy?
Is Matthew Stafford healthy? This game, we know where the ball's going on the Rams side. That much is clear. This game feels like it's bound to disappoint on the offensive side, just overall.
Yeah, and I keep coming back to the Houston offensive line woes, just in general. It was an issue last year. I think it's going to be an issue again. Now their defense has a lot of talent on paper. We saw CJ Stroud take a big step back, but I think there was a lot more at play than anybody really kind of wanted to talk about here. I don't think it was all on CJ Stroud. And by the way, Bobby Slowick was supposed to be a head coach, and that didn't happen, right? So again, he's with the Dolphins now, I think. But again, there was a lot of moving parts last year. I think it's Nico Collins and volume. Christian Kirk missed practice earlier this week.
He's out.
Oh, dear Lord. So you have to wonder how ready Jaden Higgins is. And there's not 32.5 for Jaden Higgins. That could be interesting. But no, I think we're going to see volume to the typical characters here. It feels like a game where Nico should get 12 targets. Right. A lot of people are just really quick to crown the Rams as like Super Bowl contenders. And I feel like every year they're fun. I have like a 70 to 1 ticket on them every year that kind of becomes fun. But like, I can't take the Rams super seriously with the defensive side of the ball there. That doesn't mean I think Houston's going to hang a big number because I think they have problems on their own right here. But I don't know, Keith. This is mostly a pass for me this game.
Nico Collins, the definite interest from me, I think the 12 target line was spot on. Like, this is a dude. Like, he is a legitimate top-end wide receiver in the league. Everything that he has shown, the target share is up around 30%. Now you're taking Christian Kirk off the field. Like, there's no competition for targets. Nico is going to be heavily involved here. I think 12 is certainly in the range. I think 15 is an out of the question targets, that is. So all things Nico Collins for me, not touching this backfield with the corpse of Nick Chubb. Damian Pierce also had a major injury in his career and isn't quite what he showed his rookie season. Not touching the backfield. It's all Nico Collins. If you want to take some shots on the rookie Higgins, I'm okay with that. I should step into a pretty large role here without Christian Kirk, you would think. I'm not interested in anything beyond that.
One thing jumps out at me a little bit, early season Kyren Williams, last year, 7 out of the first 8 games, he had at least 18 carries, number here, 16 and a half. You know, if this game, the Rams are going to run the ball no matter what. So I definitely like the over for Kyren Williams earlier in the year at the 16 and a half number.
Is this 5.5 line for Collins like standard across the industry right now? I know it's juiced heavily, but if you can even get like a little bit lighter of a number there, I would still probably hit that 5.5. This show is awesome because we go game by game, and now we're like, I'm seeing things that I didn't have time to look into just yet. And that 5.5 number seems about like a catch and a half too light. Collins, obviously awesome. 23% target share last year. That was with Diggs playing 8 games. That was with, some other guys in the mix as well. I think he might have a 30% target share, for the first couple weeks of the season.
Seeing a lot of 5.5s out there for Nico. 6.5 is available, plus 115, plus 125 in some spots. Even seeing a plus 135 over 6.5. I like that number quite a bit.
All right. Well, listen, with that, guys, we just completed the first ever pick show for the NFL. I'm sure there's going to be copycats as a result of us, being out here, sticking our necks out. Hopefully we had some good ideas. I know I am going to be, after I disconnect, we'll be making some bets based on what we discussed here today. Any closing comments, guys, or should we just say sign off and see you later?
Yeah, just a quick little, four-liner here. Thanks for tuning in. Give our YouTube channel a subscription. Follow us. Check out our Discord. Every view helps. Send us some questions, whether it's in the YouTube chat next week or the Discord. Tell us how bad our picks were from the previous week. Make fun of Jeff for giving us kicker props, which are probably going to hit, by the way, though, honestly.
Yeah,
I
really do.
They're
like
gold, too. So thank you all for tuning in. And, Keith, you got anything before we head out of here?
Nothing else from me. Happy to be here. Happy to talk some betting with you guys. Excited for this NFL season. Can't wait to get started.
All right. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Thanks.